So that's okay, inshallah. Bismillah. Alhamdulillah. Salatu wassalam ala Rasulullah wa alihi wa sahbihi wa sallam. Allahumma zidna ilma wa hikma wa huda. Wa na'udhu billahi min shururi anfusina wa sayyati a'malina amma ba'd. Respected brothers in Islam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Inshallah. How are you doing? Inshallah. Inshallah, we thought we'd take this time, inshallah, a few minutes, inshallah, between Maghrib and Isha, to have some classes on the fiqh of business. Perhaps with your advice, inshallah, maybe we could. I think this is a very important subject. And the does anybody know the longest ayah in the Quran? No, Ayatul Kursi is not the longest ayah in the Quran. It's one of the virtuous, most virtuous ayahs in the Quran. But the yes, there's another ayah close to Ayatul Kursi, a little bit after it. It takes up the whole page in the Mus'haf. Does anybody know what that ayah is about? Yes, it's in Surah Al-Baqarah. Yes, what is this? يا أيها الذين آمنوا إذا تداينتم بدين إلى أجل مسمى فاكتبوا. The whole page, this, the longest ayah in the Quran, it talks about the rulings of business transaction. The longest ayah in the entire Quran, it's pertaining to business transactions. And not only that, the whole previous section, the whole previous page is about the rulings of riba. And the next page, it continues about the business. So this gives us an idea. Is wealth and dealing with wealth and business part of Islam? Absolutely. Absolutely. Islam is not restricted to just ibadat, worship. But Islam is dunya and akhirah. It regulates these matters of how to do business, how to transact with one another. In fact, Umar ibn al-Khattab, you might have heard the story about him. He used to go to the marketplace and he would test the merchants. He would ask them, do you know the rulings of riba? What is this haram? Is this halal? If they didn't know the answer, he would tell them, come out, leave the marketplace. Because we don't want you to be a cause of Allah's anger with us. You're doing evil transactions. And when people cheat or they do haram in the business, it will prevent the rain from coming down and the barakah from coming. So Umar radiallahu anhu, he used to tell the people to leave the market. He used to test them to make sure they had knowledge of the business transactions. So it is something very important for us to have knowledge about, inshaAllah ta'ala. So here in the chapter that we're continuing in, this is on the chapter of the business transactions. The brother, he read the hadith, and this the topic of this hadith is called the muzabana. The muzabana is when a man sells the fruit of his garden that he has on the trees for an equivalent amount of the picked fruit, the dry fruit. So for example, he has on his tree, he has grapes, and he wants some raisins right away. So muzabana, he makes an agreement with somebody, give me the raisins and you can have the fruits that are on my tree. This is called muzabana. And the Prophet ﷺ, he forbade this. He also forbade another type of transaction, is when you sell the crops that are on the that are still growing for the picked crops, like the wheat, for example. The wheat is still on the stalk, and he says, I will sell you some of the wheat that is already picked for the wheat that I have in my farm. So the Prophet ﷺ, he forbade these types of transactions. And so here the scholars, they mention why is this prohibited? Why is it prohibited to trade the wheat that's on the farm for the wheat that's already picked? What is the reason behind the prohibition? This takes a little bit of understanding the rules of Islamic law. There's something called riba. And riba in Islam, a lot of us, what do you think is riba when we hear the word riba? Yes? Not rishwa. Maybe rishwa for the banker, for the lender.
Sood,
yes. In Urdu they say sood. Or riba, what it refers to is, and what most people would say, I would guess, what would you say riba is?
Something you are getting for nothing.
Okay.
I mean, you are getting the profit without any share of loss.
Okay, this is a way of understanding it in the modern context, like in the bank loans, for example. Most people say interest. That's, I think, what a lot of people come to mind. When we say riba, they think of interest. But actually, in the definition in the Islamic law, it's a little bit more things involved than that. It's not only on cash, but it could be from a number of different things. They can have riba. And basically what riba is when you trade two things, two commodities, so for example, dates for dates, but in an uneven amount. Like, say you have 2 kilograms of dates, and I have 1 kilogram of dates.
That's the same thing.
You're giving, I tell you, I'll give you my 1 kilogram of dates, provided you give me your two. Mine are better than yours. This is, the Prophet said, this is riba. This is riba. It's increasing.
Are different kinds?
Even if they're better quality or lesser quality, it doesn't matter. He said, if you want to get the better quality dates, sell it for something else. Sell it for gold, sell it for money. Then go and buy the better quality dates. But exchanging the two kinds of the same kind, the same type, dates, it even applies to salt, it applies to wheat, barley, gold and silver. There's a hadith that mentions these things. So gold, if you have a pound of gold and he has a pound and a half of gold and you want to exchange it, is that allowed?
No.
That would be riba. The Prophet ﷺ said, gold for gold, silver for silver, wheat for wheat, barley for barley, salt for salt, hand in hand. That means you can't have any delay in between. And he said, the same for the same. They have to be exactly the same amounts. If you want to trade silver for silver, they have to be the same amount. Gold for gold, same amount. What if you trade gold for silver? Does it have to be the same amount?
No.
No. Because in the hadith itself, it says if the types differ, then trade them as you wish, but make sure it's hand to hand. So they have to do with cash transaction. But you don't have to be equal for equal when the types are different.
You can do for cash too, meaning $1,000, up to 2 years, $3,000.
That's exactly riba.
That's
what the banks do. That's
my concern. My sister has a class in the bank. They don't like to
know. Oh, I see. Okay, sure. Okay, I'm going to have to try to speak loudly then. Yes, yeah, so the. Bismillah ar-Rahman.
So,
yes, inshallah. Come, your brothers can come close. May Allah reward you. Jazakallah khair. So, so here the Prophet ﷺ, he's prohibiting the sale of the fruit that's still growing on the tree, for the fruit that is already picked, like the dry grapes or the dates and so on. And the reason for this is, can you be sure that these two quantities are the same? If you have maybe you look on the tree, maybe you think there's 1,000 pounds worth of raisins of grapes when they become raisins. So he gives you 1,000, and later on you find out there was 1,500 on the tree. So in fact, what ended up happening is a type of riba. A type of riba took place. So the Prophet ﷺ, he forbade that. That's called muzabana. Muzabana is when you take the picked fruit and you exchange it for the fruit that's still growing on the tree. And this is not allowed according to the Sharia.
What about if you have gold and you sell it for, let's say, gold rate is $1,000?
Yes.
Pounds,
yes.
For example.
Yes.
It's never.
Yes. Yes.
But, if you sell it for $1,000, this 1 pound, and sell it. No, if the rate is $2,000 for a pound, and you buy it for 1,000.
Uh-huh.
Somebody sold it, sell it to you for 1,000, and you sell it for 2,000 again, whatever the rate.
That's fine, because you're selling gold for cash. That's okay. When you exchange gold or silver or any of these things in a different category, there's no problem. It can be, that's halal. It can be a different amount. But when it's the same category, it has to be the same amount. So when it's cash for cash, for example, a bank gives you money, you give them back the exact same amount. This is what is allowed in Islam. And the same thing for the tree, the dates on the if the tree has the dates and you want to give him gold for the dates on the tree, is this allowed? Is this muzabana?
No,
this is not muzabana, because it has to be the same type. When it's the same type, it becomes riba. But if you're giving him a different fruit, you're giving him gold, you're giving him silver for those things on the tree, then this is allowed, inshallah. But there's some other conditions that the ulama talk about. They say when you buy the fruit on the tree, it has to be ripe. It has to be, and this is going to come later on. Because if you guess, you see some nice fruit, you think it's going to become very healthy, and then the buyer comes and he says, here's the money, I want the fruits when they become ripe. You take the money, and he's expecting to get those fruit, but the hadith is going to come, you cannot sell the fruit until they become ripe. Do not sell the fruit until they turn yellow and red, some hadith say. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that, what is the reason for that?
Because it might be different in
amount. That's one reason.
Yeah.
It might come out different than you expected, but actually the hadith, it gives a more sound reason, more stronger reason.
At the same time, it might get destroyed.
And the Prophet ﷺ said, do not sell the fruit on the tree until it's safe from ahat, means diseases. Some disease might come to it. He paid the money expecting he's going to get all this fruit, and then everything gets destroyed. So then he would feel cheated, and then this would be prohibited.
Well, for example, a person has a garden, for example, of apples or whatever.
Yes.
And he sell it for the whole year. I mean, he knows every year those plants gives around this much amount of apples.
Yes.
And he sell it like before there was no fruit on it. But he gave it to somebody, give me $100,000 or give me $10,000 for the whole year.
Yes.
It's yours. So that should be.
That's completely prohibited. That's not allowed, because he's buying the fruit before it even exists. Not only even if it exists, but it's not ripe yet,
yes,
it's still haram to buy it. Still not allowed.
It's happening, and it is happening all over the world, not only in here. Even in Saudi Arabia, they sell the gardens of dates like that.
Right.
They are not ripe yet, but they sell, okay, I buy these three trees, four trees, ten trees.
Yeah.
I will take the fruit of those trees and that much amount. It is happening even now.
Right.
So
there's another.
I understand that. But
there is one exception. There's one exception when it comes to dates only. Only for dates, nothing else.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The Prophet ﷺ, the hadith was here, we were going to read it. But the Prophet ﷺ gave a leeway, rukhsa. It says, rakhisa fil araya. That means he allowed trading the dates that are still growing on the tree for the picked dates. He allowed that. He gave a leeway for that. But then the next hadith says, if it's less than 5 osaq. 5 osaq is about 600 kilograms. Why did he make this leeway? The ulama say that the farmer, he might have some immediate need for, not for business, he's not trying to outsmart somebody. I'm going to sell you these dates that are growing. Because muzabana, zaban, actually what it means is that somebody's trying to profit. Zaban means he's trying to get a little, he's trying to outsmart the other. So the farmer thinks he's smarter. He's saying he's going to give me 1,000 kilos of dates, and I know there's only 900 up there. So he's trying to outsmart the buyer. And the businessman, he estimates is going to be 1,100 kilograms. So he says, I'll give him 1,000. So each one is trying to outsmart the other. That's what zaban means, muzabana. That's haram, that's prohibited.
It doesn't matter if both parties have agreement, agree with each other. Still,
it doesn't matter.
That's why the transaction is taking place.
In order for the agreement to be valid, it's not only that both parties agree, but it has to fulfill the conditions of Islamic law. Sometimes people might agree. They might agree to riba. They say, okay, I'm going to take the loan. I agree. But agreement to pay riba. Agreeing.
That's why it's taking place.
You go to the bank and take the cash from them, and you are agreeing with them,
of course, but that is haram.
Agreeing to do it doesn't make it halal. Because somebody agrees to do zina, they both agree, it doesn't make it halal. There's certain conditions that the Islamic law has put that makes the contract correct. It makes it permissible for the husband and wife to have that. And likewise in business transactions, the agreement is one condition. It has to be there. You cannot force another person. They both have to agree to it, and it has to be clear that one of them was not insane or they went into it willfully. Nobody compelled them.
That is one of them. Ijab
and qabul, that has to be there in every contract. Ijab and qabul. But then there should be nothing in the contract, no conditions that nullify, that corrupt it. And one of those conditions, when you have an unknown quantity on either side. So for example, he says, I'll sell you all the fruit in my garden, but there's no way to know. That he hasn't seen the garden, he hasn't measured it, he hasn't given an estimate. He has to actually see the tree, he has to see the fruit, and it has to be ripe. That's one of the conditions, yes.
If one brother doesn't have any intention to be overcome, he said, like, okay, maybe I'll make some money or not.
Here, the Islamic law, even though he doesn't intend to cheat him, the Islamic law prohibits it because some cheating might take place without him intending it. He might be very sincere. The buyer, he says, I think there's 1,000 there. I'll give you 1,000. And he's very sincere. And it ends up being 1,500 or 2,000. So then he didn't intend to cheat him, but the farmer in the end, he loses out big time in that transaction. So in order to be fair, the Islamic law says that they should at least know, both the parties have to know what they're buying and what they're getting into. So muzabana, in here, is only allowed for a small amount of dates. And that's just enough for that person that he needs to eat and feed his family. So the Prophet ﷺ did what they call rukhsa. Rukhsa in Islam, it means to make a leeway, make something easy.
Concession.
Like, for example, when we travel, we pray less raka'at. So this is called a rukhsa, making things easy. The Prophet ﷺ, he made it easy for the companions. So he said, you can sell less than 500 kilograms, 5 osaq, because this is what a family would need typically to survive and take care of the animals and so on.
And take the land, you know, I have a land, a lot of land, and someone come to me, can I have some land from you, and whatever I like to do, I can do, like, for 10 years or 5 years.
That's different. This is a little bit different. This is when you're not selling the fruit of that, you're selling the actual land. What he grows on it, if he gets a lot of fruit, he gets less, if the snow or the frost destroys it, that's his problem.
5 years.
Because you didn't guarantee him, you didn't tell him, I'm selling you any fruit, you're just renting him the land.
Yeah.
And whether he makes use of it, maybe he doesn't even plow the land. That's all. It's all upon the renter.
Two conditions, yeah. As I know, if you are giving the land to somebody, and he is giving you a fixed amount for that, for example, like if you say, okay, take my land,
yes,
give me $10,000 for that for 1 year, every year you have to pay me this specific amount. And his intention is like to grow something, and he is earning maybe $20,000, maybe nothing.
That is allowed.
I don't know.
This is called mukhabara.
I'm not sure. Yeah. So
this is another transaction. This is called mukhabara from Khaybar. Have you heard of the town of Khaybar? There was a Jewish town, and the Prophet ﷺ, the Sahaba, attacked Khaybar, and after the Battle of Khandaq, and they took over the town, and the Jews, they told the Prophet ﷺ, let us stay here. If you let us stay here, we'll, because we know the trees better, we know how to grow the dates. If you take over the town, you won't be able to be successful as us. So let us stay here, and we'll give you half of whatever grows. And the Prophet ﷺ accepted this condition. They said, you can stay on this land, you're better at growing it, and you have to pay the Muslims half of whatever grows on that. And this was allowed. This is called mukhabara.
This is allowed, as I know, that to have an agreement, like give me a half, one third,
yes,
one fourth, one tenth, means the percentage.
Right.
Percentage
yes.
fixation may be allowed, but the fixed amount may not be allowed.
Yes, that's right. Because the fixed amount, if you say half the amount that grows, this
yeah,
is...
Yeah, whatever grows,
this is fair,
give me
right.
the half, give me
yes.
the 90%
right.
is
right.
also allowed. Give
yes.
me 99% is also allowed,
no.
but give me that the fixed amount,
right.
like 1,000 kilogram of wheat, that might not be
right. And if you specify that,
but nowadays this thing is being weighed in monetary values, like in India, Pakistan, even it might be careful that people have land, they lend their land or they lease their land and get a fixed amount on that. That's a kind of a lease agreement. Over there, it's called theka.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, this is not allowed.
Aapne theke pe zameen de.
This is not allowed.
No.
For the fixed amount, that is not
if
allowed.
If you fix the amount as a price, that's
the
okay.
Agriculture land,
that's what we're talking about.
If you're renting,
agriculture
right.
land for the fixed amount is not
yes.
allowed.
If you're renting the land for a certain price, this is okay. This
yeah,
is allowed. But if you say that...
That's what he's saying. Renting the land. You are renting the land.
Is this the same thing?
Right.
Yeah.
Renting out the land for a certain price,
the
this is...
The agriculture land, right. renting for a fixed
no.
price,
yes.
no.
allowed? That's
no.
allowed.
But there's some conditions. I don't...
Some conditions.
Yeah, there's some conditions that we'll get back to that in, maybe in the future, inshallah.
Yeah,
but let's go.
This is a whole topic,
yes,
I think, because this is not clear.
Yeah, we'll get.
Topic, as I know that for the fixed amount,
I have seen you practically in my whole life.
I know what's going on there on the ground, but what is allowed, I'm talking about that. I don't know much. But
I understand at the same time what we are talking, alhamdulillah. We are learning.
Yes.
And we're learning more and more.
Right.
But at the same time, when we used to do that, and some ulama was talked to them that this is we are doing, is it okay? So it was said that yes, it was okay to rent the land or lease the land. You give them a lease.
Okay, one more question.
For 1 year,
yes.
2 years, 3 years, 5 years.
Yeah, the lease can be for two.
Yes.
I mean, lease is, for example, I'm leasing the land.
No.
For percentage, or I'm leasing the land for the fixed amount.
Yes.
Fixed amount.
So as I know, for the fixed amount is not allowed in Islam, and for the percentage, whatever the percentage between both agrees on a certain percentage.
Okay, we'll get back to that, inshallah. I don't want to go to a different topic. Go ahead, brother. It's okay. We'll get back to that subject.
In my country, we have something like if I have some land, I need some money, right?
Yes.
So I go to this brother, young brother. Take my land and give me like $50,000.
Yeah.
Then you grow up the whatever it grows,
right,
which
right.
goes to you. And whenever
right.
I get,
you're renting the land. Yes.
And
you're renting the land and not the crop that comes from it. That's different.
And he when I pay him back, then I get my land.
Is
that right.
Okay, that is a different scenario.
That is the riba.
Okay.
Yeah. That you take the loan from somebody and. You are intended to give him
you are
the
pledging your
no.
land.
No.
You are pledging your land for the time period or for uncertainty.
Uncertainty. Like whenever
so that
I get
the
money,
whenever
I
right.
able
I'll
to get
money.
Yeah,
yes. Any loan that brings benefit is prohibited. Any loan, when you loan something, if you get some benefit from it, that loan, then it's haram.
It is haram.
Any kullu qard yajurru manfa aw nafa fahuwa haram, huwa riba. So when you give a loan for anything to somebody, it should be for the sake of Allah. In Islam, loaning is not a means of making profit.
Only a tarz-e hasana in Islam.
Yes.
This is unripped garden or unripped fruit or something. You cannot sell that unless it is not ready.
If you have unripe fruit, there's only two times you could sell it. You could sell it if the person wants to use it for his animals. Like say there's some fruit, he doesn't want to eat it himself, but he needs it for some specific purpose. He's going to give it to the animals, to the goats, things like that. You can sell it in that case, inshallah ta'ala. And the other case, I think, when you can sell the unripe fruit, actually the fruit, it has to be ripe. For the other issue is like some people say that they can eat it raw, they can benefit from it raw. But the scholars, they say that the person of average taste, that you know, some people eat bananas green, some people eat them when they're very yellow. So the person of average taste and the average amount of fruit, not when the first one became ripe, but the majority of it, or the average amount, it became ripe. For the average person, they can benefit from that. Then it becomes permissible to sell it, inshallah. Yes?
Does this apply to animals as well?
It applies to animals in... you cannot sell the baby of the mother. So, for example, there's a pregnant sheep. Somebody, he comes and he says, I want to buy the baby of this sheep. Mm-hmm. That's prohibited. And because you don't know what is going to come out. Is it going to be a male? Is it going to be female? Might be twins. It might be dead. You don't know the qualities of what's going to come out of that animal. And likewise, you cannot sell. They say, they talk about this, the what they call the stud, like the male horse. They sometimes people, they say, I'll pay you for your horse to impregnate the female horse. This is also prohibited to do that, because there's no guarantee that the horse will become pregnant. So he says, $100, I'll give you my male horse, and he will impregnate the female horse. In Islamic law, you cannot do that. You can loan it to him for free. You can give it to him as a help, but you cannot pay money for
that's
that.
That's a common practice that people
right.
do it for.
Right. It should be done for free, or you can rent the male horse for a certain time period. You can't say, I guarantee that he's going to impregnate my female, but he can say, I'll rent you the horse for a week. If your female gets pregnant during that time, it's okay. If it doesn't, that I'm renting the horse, not the sperm of the horse. So, okay, JazakAllah khair, barakAllah feek. Yes, was that your question about the animals?
So Claire, can you sell the doll that has the baby inside?
The which one?
The female lamb,
you can sell the mother, you can sell the animal itself, but you cannot sell the baby that's inside. You cannot sell you can sell the animal itself.
That means you cannot add more money for the
It'll be one price for the female, but the of course a female, pregnant female, is more valuable in general. But you cannot say I'm going to pay a certain price for the child. I can only buy it. You can buy the pregnant animal. This is allowed. Inshallah. Yes, it's allowed to buy a pregnant animal.
It doesn't matter,
but
male, female, the child, the babies.
Right. You're right, exactly.
People are allowed to buy buffalo, cows.
Yes.
Children. To give the milk.
Yes. Sometimes people, what they would do, they wanted a very high breed of animal. So they'll go to an owner who has a very high class of horse, and he says, when this horse gives birth, I want to have that. I want to buy that child, because I want to have a high class of horse. That's not allowed in Islamic law. If you buy the actual horse, it's okay. But, wanting to get the progeny of that horse, then this is not... Because you don't know what the outcome of that would be. And this goes back to a concept called gharar. Gharar means ambiguity. When something is ambiguous in the Islamic law, you don't know something about it, some quality of it. Just like the fruit, you don't know if it's going to be destroyed or not. You don't know how ripe it will be. Then this is prohibited, inshallah. Okay, the next hadith here, this is related to what we're talking about. The Prophet ﷺ forbade the selling the fruit until they were ripe to the buyer and seller. And he forbade it until it became colorful. And this all goes back again to the issue of buying the fruit, unless a person has a need for the raw fruit. But if you buy the fruit, then it still has... it hasn't become ripe yet, then any disease could come to it. Any storm could come and destroy that fruit, inshallah ta'ala. So this is the reason for the prohibition of that, inshallah ta'ala. Okay. Any questions, inshallah? Any these issues? That's pretty much what we're going to cover today. Is it clear about the riba, the concept of riba? What is riba? Many people, they think riba is just
interest.
But riba could be even when you trade. Some women, they go to the goldsmith and they bring some of their jewelry and they want to buy other jewelry. And a lot of times they'll pay more with their jewelry to get the manufactured jewelry from the jeweler. It's very common they do this. And this is riba.
If they sell the gold,
first, then...
That's right. If they go to the jeweler and they say, how much will you buy me this gold, sell me this gold for cash money. Then once they sell it for cash money, they can go back and they can buy it, buy any other jewelry that the jeweler has. But if they have silver, they can trade the silver for gold, no problem. If they have gold and they're buying silver, there's no problem, as long as they trade it on the spot, inshallah ta'ala. There's no harm in that, inshallah ta'ala. Zechalukha. Yes. Okay. Okay. So let me see here if there was inshallah any other issues here related to the selling of the fruit. Yes, so we mentioned that the dates, you can sell the dates before they become ripe. But can you trade moist dates for dry dates? So for example, there's you have some dates that, you know, when the dates are on the tree, they're green. And then when you want to you eat them, they become dried out, like grapes and raisins, or the ripe dates and the dry dates. Are they allowed to trade them with each other? If they're the same kind, can you do equal for equal weight? Say, I'm going to give you a pound or 10 pounds of grapes, and you give me 10 pounds of raisins.
Yeah,
is that allowed?
Yeah, you can do that.
Do you agree? Is it allowed? No, it's not allowed. Why? The Prophet ﷺ, he said, when the grapes, they dry up, will they be the same? Say you have 10 pounds of grapes now, right here, and 10 pounds of raisins. When those 10 pounds of grapes dry up, is it still going to be 10 pounds of raisins? It's going to be less. So when you exchange the grapes and the raisins, they're not the same quantity, they're not the same weight with each other. So that would actually be riba, right? Because how are you going to get the exact same amount when you're trading the grapes and the raisins? So that would be a type of riba. This is not a mouse.
This is not like, look like a semi. If anyone can go to buy any bargain shop, like one book is costing to him like $10, he's asking me, the customer is $100.
What is it? For $1?
Anything. Like I'm going to buy that cloth in the store.
Yes.
It's cost to the seller like $10. Mm. He's going to sell it $100. You put the price in a fixed amount.
Okay, yes, yes.
So
is that wrong? What about his labor? What about all the effort, the work he had to put into tailoring it and making the dress?
He's making, his intent to make the profit 50%.
You can make any quantity of profit. There's no harm, no any percentage of profit, as long as it's acceptable in the market. It's not something that's exploitative or taking advantage of the ignorance of the person buying it. So a lot of times, you know, in the market, there's a huge markup that the companies make, you know, but that's allowed as long as it's something acceptable in the market. Sometimes the price goes up tremendously. You might have bought a house for $10,000, and because of the market, a year or two later, it's worth $100,000. That's allowed in Islamic law. There's no prohibition of profiting. What's prohibited is taking advantage of the ignorance of people, when somebody, he doesn't know what it's worth, and you charge him more because of his ignorance. This is called ghabn fahish. Ghabn fahish means like a very vast amount ignorance. Ghabn is like a big difference that's beyond what the normal market value is. So say I have something I'm going to sell you a car. The car is only worth $5,000 in the market. And a woman comes in. The woman, she doesn't know anything about cars, and she thinks it's very nice and shiny. So I sell it to her for $50,000. Car is only worth $5,000 on the normal market. So this is not allowed in Islamic law. This is called ghabn fahish. Because you're cheating, you're overcharging based on the normal market. So the tailor, the question would be, when he charges $100 for the dress, is that the normal price for the dress, or is that much more than what the going rate is? And some scholars, they limited how much more than the going rate can you charge. Some of them said 30%, some said 40%, 50%. But beyond that, you're charging more than the market price, more than 60%, 70% more, then this is considered ghabn fahish, or cheating the people. So this would not be allowed, though. Another thing that's prohibited is monopolizing. In Islamic law, you know what monopolizing is? Everybody familiar with that concept? It's called ihtikar. In the Sharia, ihtikar is, say you have some water in your store and there's a big drought and everybody's dying of thirst. So they come to the store to buy the water, and the normal price of the water is $1 for a bottle. So you say, I'm going to charge you $100 a bottle. Why? Because the people are in desperate need of it. So then taking advantage of their need is prohibited. It's not allowed in Islamic law. One should not monopolize. If they have some goods, monopolizing, ihtikar, basically what it means is holding back or preventing the goods from the market in order to artificially drive up the price. So say, for example, you have a store.
That is also called riba.
That's not riba, that's called monopolizing, ihtikar. You know, if you have some goods and you keep it and you don't want to let other people buy it because you see there's a great demand, a great need for it, so then when the people, they become too desperate for it, then you sell it to them at a very high price. That's called monopolizing. So this is not allowed, this is prohibited in Islamic law. The Prophet ﷺ said, whoever monopolizes has made a mistake. Yes.
Is there other kind of monopolies that are prohibited as well, or is it just that kind of monopoly? Can you say internet service or something like for an area, can you buy out that area?
Yes, that's another. It could, this concept could apply to, in a modern context, it could apply to services. So say that there's a company, it's the only internet provider in the whole town. So they see that everybody needs internet, so they charge $100 a month for their internet because there's no competition. So that would also apply, that would also be prohibited in Islam, that they have to make it available to the people at a reasonable price.
No. So who's going to judge what kind of market?
What they charge in the other markets where there's competition, or there's when the product is available by more than one seller. For example, what the normal going rate would be, because monopolizing wouldn't be the whole entire market. Monopolizing usually takes place in a specific time or a specific place where one buyer, one seller, one businessman, he's able to manipulate the market basically, because he has ability to control the availability of the goods.
What if there's like an oligopoly of few people who is in charge of the market together, and
right,
they all get together and set for prices?
This actually happened in the time of the Prophet ﷺ, when they came to the Prophet ﷺ and they said that the prices are too high, people are charging too much, so can you fix the prices? Then the Prophet ﷺ, he said, no, إِنَّ اللَّهَ هُوَ الْمُسَعِرِ. He said that Allah is the one who sets the prices. What does this mean, that Allah is the one that sets the prices? Allah is the one that causes the goods to be available, and the market itself will regulate itself. If the things are too expensive, don't buy it. And then the price will come down. The person who owns it, he'll have to sell it. He'll be forced to sell it. So you people will stay away from buying it, the price, he will be forced to come down on the price. The only time when it's allowed to regulate prices by the government, they say, is in goods that are of high, that are of essential need of the people, like medicine, for example. The medicine, people, they have a need for a medicine, say they have a certain type of cancer, and only one company has that medicine, they can charge anything they want and exploit the person's need for that medicine. So in this case, this would be like an exception to the rule, where the government, they can come and they can set the price of the medicine so that the people are not taken advantage of, because they have a desperate need for that. But say for things that people don't have a need, like cars, for example. There's used cars and different companies, and there's different means of transportation. There's bus. So it's not something that's easy to manipulate. the price on. So here the Islamic law would say leave it open to people. Bananas, somebody sells bananas, he's charging a very high rate. Don't buy bananas, buy apples, buy oranges until he brings the price down. So these things are not something that's essential in the society.
No. If someone takes the advantage of that type of things, like, you know, in a Ramadan time in our country, yes, like some things is food is coming higher and higher, like, you know, because of that, some people they are like waiting for that season to come.
Yes, and yes.
They intend to do that thing, make their money.
Yes, yes. That's allowed here because the goal here is not to manipulate the people, to exploit the people here. The purpose of storing those fruit, like sometimes I had a friend, he had an apple orchard, so he bought a huge fridge. And he would store the apples in the fridge until the season, until like the winter time. And then he would bring the apples and sell them in the market, he would get a much better price. If he sold it in the summertime when everybody's apples are available, it would have been a very, very low price. So doing that is allowed because his goal here, he's not preventing the goods from the market because other people are selling the apples. There's other apples available, the other farmers, they don't have fridge maybe, so they're selling it. So he wants to save it for a time when there won't be any apples in the market. And then he can sell it and he can get a better price for those apples. So this is nothing wrong with that. He's not monopolizing. Yes?
What if he's driving the price during the summertime? Would that be considered
haram? He's not really driving up the price unless all the apple farmers together, they said, let's take away all the apples from the market and only leave a little bit in charge, you know, in a very exorbitant rate, then that would have been monopolizing. But him, as an individual, he doesn't have the power to do that. Because there's so many apple farmers. There's so many sources and places to get apples from. He wouldn't have that control. But say if he worked, he was the only apple owner in the whole country, which is not possible. But say he was the only one, or he bought all of the orchards in the whole country. And now, he says, I'm going to only allow a small amount of apples on purpose so that people are desperate for the apples and I can charge them a very high rate. That would be monopolizing. But when you have more than one person in the market, it's impossible to monopolize. That would only be the case when you're the only one who has the good, inshallah.
Now, there are some things that generally we say we want monopolize. So is it okay for certain things to be monopolized and then the government will set the price so that it doesn't go too high? For example, like say the buses or say National Grid or something, like we don't want any company who wants to come just come and put money
in the floor. We mentioned this just as you were walking in. We talked about there's certain things the government, the Prophet ﷺ said, Allah is the Musa'id, Allah sets the prices. But here the ulama make an exception for things that are of essential need for the people, because if they don't have it, they wouldn't. There are essentials of life like electricity, water, medicine, things that are necessities of life. Then you know they can regulate it. Even in times, sometimes maybe bread even. They would set the price, something that people are very, a staple food, for example. But luxury items, by definition, there's no essential need for it. So that would be left up to the market to take care of. You know, well, the price of the car, for example, which maybe many people consider it an essential item, but actually, you can live without a car, for example. So that would be something that it wouldn't be the job of the government to regulate the price. Because that would be the fair market, whatever supply and demand, and that's allowed in Islamic law. That's what the Prophet ﷺ, the way he dealt with the high prices. When the prices got high, he said, "Allah will regulate the price." Do you understand what that means? When you say Allah will regulate the price, it might be a little bit confused. It means people by nature they'll stop buying it because it's too expensive, and then the prices will come down on their own.
So for the necessities, we have to look at like another factor than this. Size of like this, so say for apple, for example, you said that there might not be one apple farmer in the world.
Yes.
So if you have like a small country and there is like two apple farmers,
yes,
would that be haram if he started during the summer time to sell it during the winter?
If you have small country, you have two apple farmers storing the apples to get a good price for them. A good price. Here, the difference between ihtikar and monopolizing, the definition, let me give you the definition of monopolizing, then you can see if it applies, is deliberately withholding the good from the market to increase the demand for it so that one can charge a higher price. Now here in the summer, I would say that there's an oversupply of apples in the summer. So actually, he's not trying to increase the demand, he's actually trying to meet the demand, but at a future time. Because here, when there's so many apples in the market, it's going to be too cheap. And this, I've seen this, when all the farmers, they come, they all want to sell, we have something in Syria they call mushmush. Mushmush are little apricots like this. And they all come ripe at the same time. So all of the farmers, most of them are poor, they can't afford the fridges and things like that. They all come at the same time, and they become like almost free. And so it's an oversupply. So this person who's storing it away, he's not really trying to create an artificial fear or an exorbitant demand for it. He's just trying to regulate the availability of it to make it available the whole year. And that way he's going to get a better price, because if he sells it all at once, it wouldn't be
benefit. In the process, if some of them rot, that become rotten. Does it then have to, when it sees most of them is becoming rotten, does it have to sell it then, or can you wait still until when you want
it? Certainly, if the fruit goes bad, he's not allowed to sell it. Oh, okay.
Can he sell those? Does he have to sell those at that time when he sees some of them are rotting?
That's really up to the farmer. I mean, he's going to lose. It's up to him what he thinks he's going to benefit. If he realizes, I stored a longer period of time, I'm going to lose some of the fruit, that's his own profit he has to look at. If he loses some of it, will he still make it up with the rest of it? So it's really up to the farmer. It wouldn't be, but he would. The main thing he would not be allowed to do is to hide the rotten fruit. The Prophet ﷺ, he forbade the deception. People, they hide the defect of the fruit or something like that. They put the good ones on top, all the nice ones on the top, and then underneath are all the rotten ones. This would not be allowed in that case. Yes, sir. Yes.
Now, before Allah, He enjoins people to be kind to everybody.
Yes.
Kindness.
Yes.
Not to cheat other people. So in this case here, when people, they hoard the thing, it's like they're cheating.
Yes.
People,
yes.
They're hurting their brother, So the law of Allah sponsors that people have to be kind, even though they sell it to the customer, not to take advantage of them.
Yes, that's the if you look at the overall.
I was actually asking if his item is becoming rotten, then he won't be able to sell it after when he wanted to sell it. Then it'll ruin his. So I was thinking it might become haram on him because he's trying to get better price, but
right. If he's going to sell it to people with that defect in it, that would be haram for him to do that. When he stores it too long and it has some defect in it that as soon as they bring it home it'll be rotten, that would be wrong. Generally speaking, that what the Sheikh Sajid, he mentioned, is that the principle in Islamic law is to prevent disputes from arising. One of the main goals in the Sharia, Allah says, "Innam al-bay'u." The Prophet ﷺ said, "Innam al-bay'u an taradin minkum." That sales should be contentment on both parties. Taradin means both people should be content. So one of the main purposes behind what we see in these Islamic laws is to make sure that both parties in the transaction, they will not feel cheated in any way. They won't feel wronged in any way. Taradin, to be pleased with one another. And this is a very important concept, which is why gharar, uncertainty, is prohibited. Because one of the main results of uncertainty is disputes. Say that I sold you, I wrote a contract with you to buy some car, but I didn't give you the full description, or you didn't see the car properly. You saw it at night, or you didn't see the inside of the car, you didn't see the engine, you just saw the picture of it. So in Islamic law, that transaction would not be valid if the person didn't get the full details of the thing that he's buying. And if there was a hidden defect that turned out afterwards that was present at the time he bought it, and the buyer knew about it and he didn't tell the person, and it becomes apparent afterwards, then he has a right to get that defect repaired or get compensated for it, and or he can return the item. And this is something in Islamic law that we don't even have here what they call as is transactions here, where you buy the car and that's it. The minute you drive it home, the engine, there's a huge defect in the engine, and so on. Some places they've tried to implement this aspect of Islamic law, like even, you know, many stores, they give you a return policy. But Islam actually had this concept long before we have it today. Today they do it so that they can keep the customers coming back. But Islam does it out of fairness. You know, that people, they should be treated fairly in a transaction. They should be happy with one another, inshallah, when they buy and sell, inshallah. It's not just to make profit so that you keep the customers coming, but it's to be fair. Okay. If I sold you something that had something wrong in it, then you have a right to.
Isn't allowed to do that if I'm going to buy a car like in store and I like that car too much, like, and its price is $20,000, can I pay $25,000?
Can you charge somebody more?
No, I can. Like, I am willing to pay $5,000
yes.
more
yes.
because I am happy to see that car.
Oh, I see.
Is that allowed to do that? Or?
It's up to, you know, it's the agreement of the buyer and the seller. So you can pay more than the market price if you think that you're not going to be able to get it, or you might lose it, or you're allowed to pay more. And in the same way, the buyer, he's allowed to sell it for less than his cost. Or more. It doesn't. It's up to the agreement of the two parties. You know, there's no prohibition in selling it and paying more or paying less. That's part of the negotiation that's allowed in Islam. That's left up to the market. You know, the people. But if you want to pay more, maybe I should sell you my car. But no. Barakallahu feek. Yes. Okay. So is that clear on the monopoly? Concept of monopoly is prohibited in Islam. Okay, and so the issue here, what we're talking about, is the fruit before they become ripe. They did say, like some of the ulama, they said that some people, they like raw fruit. And some people, they like fruit that is very much delayed, that's very, very ripe. So here, when the Islamic law, it says, when are you allowed to sell it? Then they said that it should be ripe for the average person. It should be ripe for the average person. You know, that the fruit is, you know, somebody says, I want to buy all of your crop here. And, you know, some people, they might say it's edible, barely edible. Then you cannot sell it at that stage. Just because it's barely edible, because still something could happen to it, and if something happened to it, then it didn't come to proper fruition, then very few people would be willing to buy that fruit. Do you see the wisdom here? So the ruling would be that it should be ripe and available and edible for the majority of people, the average people of average taste, not just some people. And it shouldn't only be a few of the fruits. Somebody might say, I'm going to sell my apple farm, all my apples, because look at this one apple, it's nice and red. And all the rest are green. And that's not following the Islamic law. The Prophet ﷺ, he said, when they appear to be ripe, and this means the majority. And what is important here is that they're safe from disease. They're safe from, if a disease or something were to come, the disease usually doesn't happen when they're ripe. It happens when they're growing, when they're still in the developing stages, inshallah ta'ala. Okay, any other questions here? Yes.
Can you tell us, like, something along, like, here,
like seven Japanese cents, you know, need to buy car or buy the house, but we don't have enough cash to buy the pay
yes, yes.
Of the
this is a good question.
If I go to some Korea law, they advertise a lot of organization I know. Different.
Okay.
They claim themselves and they are following Sharia law.
Yes. Yes.
As a person, as a Muslim, what should I look for? How I clarify that, you know, this person is going to say like a
Sharia
person.
Okay. Jazakallah khair. Bismillah. Alhamdulillah. Salatu wassalam. A few questions the brothers asked. He asked about buying a car or buying a house if you don't have enough money to buy those things, then what should a person do? Okay, so first of all, in Islamic law, you're allowed to buy things on a payment or installments. This is allowed in Islamic law. So if you buy a house or you buy a car and you're paying installments, like say you bought a car, it costs $10,000 or $12,000, let's say, and you say every month I'm going to pay $500, and after 2 years I paid for the whole car. This is completely allowed in Islamic law. It doesn't say that in Islamic law you don't have to pay cash, all cash up front. There, it is allowed to make payments. But what is not allowed, what is haram, is when a person, they charge interest or they charge an extra rate for delaying the payment. So if you agree in the beginning that you're going to pay $12,000 for the car and you're going to make installments, payments and installments, this is perfectly halal. But if they say that every month you're late, you have to pay so-and-so interest or so-and-so late fee for every month that you're late in payment, then this is not allowed. This is haram. So the same thing goes for the houses. If somebody, he finances the house for you, meaning he'll let you pay it on installments over a period of 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, rent to own situation, this is completely halal. But what the banks do, they say, we'll buy the house, we'll give you the money, and you give us back the money. They're not buying the house and selling it to you. They're giving you money and they're asking you for more money back. That's not allowed in Islamic law. Now somebody, an investor, he buys a house and he owns it, he takes it into his possession, and then he resells it to you at a higher price. Is that allowed? Yes, that's business. That's what every store does. They buy it for cheap and they sell it for more. So he bought it for cheap, and he's reselling it to you, and he might give you an installment plan. He bought it on cash. This is okay. This is halal, inshallah. And that's the concept behind what would be an Islamic type of transaction, where somebody who's an investor, he buys a house and he owns it completely. He has a risk. Maybe you change your mind, maybe you don't want it anymore, or maybe he sells it to you, and then afterwards you made payments on it, you bought half of the house, and then you stop making payments. So then he takes a risk that he cannot charge you any interest or any extra price on the money that you still owe on the house. The most he can do, he has to wait for you. You can't make the payment. In Islamic law, he cannot charge you a late fee, the investor, the bank here. He cannot charge you a late fee. He cannot punish you for delaying payment if you don't have the money. He has to let you delay your payment. And if in the end it turns out the person, he lost his job, he can't afford the house anymore, so what is the only thing that's allowed? He can use the collateral, which is the house. He can request for the house to be sold, and you get the money you put into it, and he gets the money that is still owed to him. That's the Islamic concept of house or car and things like that. So do you see the does it clear that
this point is clear?
Yes.
But you know, how is going to be applied here? You know, like I'm going to buy a house from the, like, who is on sale?
Yes.
But on the same day, the investor is going to buy a house for me. and next day he put more price on it.
Yes.
Is that allowed to do that?
Why not? If you have a store and you buy some eggs for a dollar and you reset, you know that your customers are going to come, they're going to pay $2 for it. It's okay. There's no harm in that. You know, this is type of
the price for a saving.
At the time when you buy it from him, the price has to be fixed. So say he bought the house for $100,000, he owns it. Now he wants to sell it to you. And you talk, you're in a negotiation, you say, I want to pay it over 10 years. He says, I'll sell it to you for $150,000. You say, you agree or you disagree, it's up to you. But when you agree to pay $150,000 over 10 years, that becomes the final price. Now, if you get delayed, you're not able to pay it on time, can he charge you more?
No, he cannot charge you more. I sold the house over here. You are the owner, right?
Mm-hmm.
I told you how much the house is.
Yes.
$50,000.
Yes.
I don't have $50,000. I go to the Islamic financial company, right? I know the house price is $50,000. If you're the owner and financing comes to you and they bought the house from you, they will reprice on that, right?
That's a different. You're buying it from the bank. You're not buying it from me anymore. You can tell the bank, I'm interested in this house, and then they say, okay, if you're interested in it, we'll consider buying it and selling it to you. But they cannot sell it to you before they buy it. That's haram. That's selling what you don't own. So if they say to you, you know, Brother Khan wants this house, let's sign a contract. They didn't even buy the house yet. You know, that's a trick. That's not allowed to do that. To sign a contract that this bank is selling you the house in a future date after they buy it from that person, this is not allowed. It's selling what you don't own. They have to buy it, completely own it, have full ownership of it. Not just on paper, just a name. They have to have real ownership of it. And that's the risk. Once they take it into their name, they're taking a risk because you could walk away. And during that time they own it, something could happen to the house. So that's the risk they're taking on. Just like a person who owns a store, he buys some goods, some eggs, and the next day nobody buys the eggs. He thought the customer was going to come, he never bought it. Then he has to throw the eggs out after a few days. So it's a risk that the company's taking. Then they can resell it to you at whatever price that you negotiate from it, inshallah ta'ala. So that's allowed, but there has to be two separate transactions, not them giving you money and, you know, you're buying the house in your name. They have to buy it first, and then you can buy it from them. They can charge you more. That's the business transaction that's there. You can negotiate the price with them after. On an installment plan, inshallah. Yes, bro.
Can they negotiate the price before they buy it? Okay.
You can talk about it, but you can't write it in a contract. No, you can talk to them and say, I'm interested in this house. And I would figure, you know, they'll say that probably, if, you know, it's just talk, but it's not binding.
You can even say, like, with your mouth that I'm going to, for sure that I'm going to buy it.
No, you cannot do that because, the scholars, they say the question comes up is a Muslim, this is a kind of a really touchy subject because a Muslim, when he gives his promise, he's supposed to fulfill his promise. So now the question here that comes up, it's a kind of advanced subject, is the promise that you give binding in a court? Or is it binding on the Day of Judgment as a religious thing, but it's not enforceable in court? So the majority of scholars, they said that, alaykum salam, they said the promise is binding, alaykum salam, promise is binding in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But it's not binding enforceable in a court. Put it simply, I tell you, alaykum salam, I tell you I'm going to buy your car from you tomorrow. I want to buy your car. Tomorrow you bring the car, and I promise you I'm going to... Or let's make it even simpler. Go to a store. You go to the store, do you have green tea? They say, we only have red tea. I want green tea. If I bring it, are you going to buy it? You say, yes, of course, I'm going to buy it. So he goes and buys it, and he brings it to you, the green tea. And then you say, no, I don't want it anymore. Have you did something haram? According to the scholars, it's you did something wrong, because a Muslim should fulfill his oath. He should fulfill his promise. You told him you were going to buy it. You should do that, and that's something between you in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Can he take you to court and force you to buy the green tea? Here they say no. They say it's not binding in terms of in this dunya life, but it's something that a religious matter in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's not legally binding, it's morally something one would be responsible for. So you see the difference here? So when you tell the bank, yes, I'm going to buy this house, you can give them a promise to do that, and you should do that if they buy it, but you would not, they would not be able to force you afterwards in a court to buy it. This is the dominant position amongst most of the scholars. There is a minority view that even a promise is binding legally. There is a view that, this is, they say that Ibn Taymiyyah held that view, that you could actually go to court and enforce that. But the majority is that it's not binding in the worldly sense, inshallah. I hope that's clear, inshallah. Is that clear? So, you know, the issue here is that a person, when they buy the house, they have to make sure that the bank owns it before they resell it to them. It cannot be just on paper, just pretending. Then it's not a real transaction. There's no risk for the bank. The bank has to have risk. And when they buy it, they take on the risk, inshallah. Jazakallah khair. Any other questions?
Yeah,
oh, okay. Well, actually, we're. Any other questions from the sisters? This one? Any questions from the sisters, inshallah? Brothers? Well, maybe 2 minutes left. We'll get a 5 minute break for Adhan.
One question, can I do like a broker, you know, the broker house, they take a commission, is that allowed?
Okay, taking a commission as a broker, this is something allowed, it's mentioned in the books of fiqh. This is called istimsar, or middleman, you know, where you basically work as a middle person, but, you take a commission basically for that, things being sold. There's nothing wrong with that as far as I know. Jazakallah khair. Jazakallah khair. Any other questions? Khair, inshallah. Any other questions? Jazakallah khair. Subhanakallah wa bihamdik. Astaghfirullah wa atubu ilayk. May Allah reward you and accept from all of you, and may Allah increase this in knowledge.